Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. It took a lot of work, but Chris Conrad is finally in the record books, or at least his car is. In September, Conrad drove his MG Midget, a historic, diminutive British car, faster than anyone had ever driven a car of its type before. Conrad writes about that experience in the pages of the magazine MG Enthusiast, but in case your subscription has lapsed, he joins us now to share the really remarkable tale. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
MGs have never been the fastest cars out there. They've never held the same appeal to many people as cars like a classic Mustang or a Thunderbird might have held. So what is it about MGs that holds such appeal for you?
In a lot of ways, they're a proletariat sports car. They're not overly engineered. They're not expensive. During the 50s and 60s, after World War II, when they first started making an impact in the United States, they were an inexpensive, fun car that a single person or a young married couple could own, use as daily transportation, and have some fun with them. They were never intended to be anything more than that.
They were never a practical car. They were a fun car, right?
I would argue that in a lot of ways they were a practical car, especially with the MGB GT from the mid-60s. It had a hatchback in it. They were very economical on fuel, but there was the fun factor. And if you were a person whose transportation needs were minimal, an MG was in a lot of ways the perfect car. Didn't take up much space. Once again, good fuel mileage, and you look pretty good driving one, too.
Well, so until a few years ago, around 2006, I think it was, what was your history with MGs?
I'd owned a 71 MGB, and before that, you know, my interest in them was just the practicality of them. Again, the fuel economy, the fun aspect of them. I remember when I was growing up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, there was a car show at what was at the time called the Lindale Plaza. It's now the Lindale Shopping Mall, I believe. And the local British car dealer had on display Jaguars, Austin Healeys, MGs, Triumphs, all spread out throughout the mall. And all of them were interesting, but the ones that drew my attention were the MGs. Even at the age of 9, I recognized the practicality of something as simple, and there was also the fun aspect of it for someone like myself. So that's my earliest recognition of the cars. As I got older, my dad and I would go up to Road America in Elkhart Lake, and you know, we'd watch the racing. MGs were always racing. Part of that is that they're easy to work on, and there are a lot of performance parts available for them.
Well, and so when did you get it in your head that you were going to try to drive an MG faster, a particular kind of MG faster than anybody else?
Well, it wasn't even an MG that I was thinking about when I first started about land speed racing. When I was a kid, my dad would bring home automotive magazines, and every October or November in Hot Rod or one of the other publications, there'd be some coverage of what had happened at Bonneville and some of the cars. And to look at these pictures, beautiful cars on a white expanse of salt, doing nothing but driving as fast as they can. I think that's every American boy's dream, is just to open it up and let it fly. The MG aspect of it came along much later in my life as far as actually taking one to Bonneville. It was a logical choice because I was familiar with them. I'd worked on my own MGBs before, and the Midget was not all that much of a stretch. So to wind up going with that, finding a class that I could compete in, that was the start of the whole idea right there.
Well, tell me about the significance of this is the IGT class.
Okay. These are for engines between 750 and 1,000 cc's. So they're the engines aren't really all that much bigger than most motorcycle engines. The GT class is traditional two-seat sports cars. Oftentimes, they're convertibles. Sometimes they have hard tops, but they fall into the classic category of a non-family car. Nothing, it doesn't have four doors. It's just intended. The class is intended for the traditional understanding of a two-seat sports car.
And the body has to be a stock body, right?
In this particular class, yes. In GT, there's no modifications permitted. I have to run everything from the headlights to the brake lights to the little lights on the side. I even have to run a horn in the thing. It doesn't have to work, but the class requires a completely stock production body.
Well, and so you got it in your head that you're going to try to beat the land speed record, which at the time, if I have it right, 121.779 miles an hour, set 22 years before.
Yeah.
What did you have to learn to be able to do that credibly?
Well, I had to do a lot of thinking ahead of time, and I needed to research the possibility of putting together an engine that fit into that classification. I could have gone to the next class up, but that would have been for engines between 1,000 and 1,500 cc's, and the record was, at the time, I want to say 143 miles an hour. You know, some people call me crazy, but there's no way I'm going to drive an MG Midget at that kind of a speed.
You're crazy, but not that crazy.
Exactly. But this looked like a speed that was obtainable with the current, or at least the available pieces that would fit into the class. It needed to be a production-based engine. I'm allowed a lot of latitude as far as what I can do with that. So what I wound up doing is taking the larger engine, and by making a crankshaft with a shorter stroke, I was able to get it down to fit into the class category. So from there, I wound up with a very high-winding tractor motor in a lot of ways. The engine itself, the basis of that goes back to the early 1950s. But we were able to pull it together and make it happen. And it was a long struggle, a lot of time. What did I need to learn? Patience.
Well, and so talk about how they measure the record. This is on a big expanse of salt. Mm-hmm. How far do you have to go, and how many times do you have to be able to do it?
Okay. The SCTA /BNI is the sanctioning body of the records at Bonneville for American records. In the class I'm running, you have a total run of 3 miles, and they measure the third mile between the two and the three. And if you set a pace that is in excess of the standing record, the next day you need to go back and do it again, and the two speeds that you have are then averaged, and that's what determines the record on that. So you can have an extremely brilliant run, and your backup run doesn't even have to be as fast as the record in order to
as long as the average is higher than the
precisely.
Well, and you had tried to do this back in 2010, but a lot went wrong with the engine.
Yeah. There's no place to test a car.
I was going to ask that question.
Yeah.
You don't have a salt flat in Wisconsin, so how do you
– You know, some people say any old side street, but I just there's really no place to run, for 3 miles flat out in a car in Wisconsin in a straight line and do it safely. You know, there's no – even the longest straightaways at Road America are, not even a mile long. So there's testing it, sometimes you just got to roll the dice and takes your chances. And 2010, it wasn't too good.
So back to the drawing board.
Sure.
Flash forward to this year. And before we get to the scene there, without getting too technical on us, were there issues you had to consider in building this engine to run well at a higher elevation?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We wound up doing some dynamometer testing here down in Illinois. But the issues are concerned primarily air pressure. As you get closer to sea level, you have more air pressure. On a small engine where you're not supercharged where air is not being forced into the combustion chambers, you need to be able to draw just what of air is available around you. In order to get an engine to perform properly at the elevation of Bonneville, which is 4,400 feet, you need to have as large a valve as you can. You need to have as much induction as you can, as much air charge getting into it, because an engine is essentially an air pump. It's tough not getting technical about it, but essentially the higher altitude winds up making it difficult to produce horsepower.
Well, okay, so flash forward to this year, and you get out to Bonneville, and this time the car's running.
It's running quite well, actually.
What is it like to sit in an MG at 125 miles an hour?
It requires a degree of trust in the car. You, at those kind of speeds, and especially on an MG midget, which only has an 80-inch wheelbase, you can't make any quick moves. You have to trust that the car is going to go straight. You need to have a loose but firm control of the steering wheel. You need to let the car make the decisions and just offer suggestions through the steering wheel. It would be very easy to wind up flipping or spinning the car because the surface of the salt is actually quite slippery.
What kind of tires do you have on a car like this?
You know, the tires on this are off – they're drag racing front wheel tires that you'd have on a drag car that you'd see at down at Great Lakes Dragway or something like that. Very thin, very hard. The idea being there is you want to minimize your rolling resistance and you try to feather the power to keep you going rather than going with a wide tire, which would actually wind up slowing you down.
And at the same time, you were not able to test it before you got out there. And so as the speedometer is going up, it must be a little nerve-wracking to not know whether you're going to get there.
Well, there's always a possibility. I mean, I've had friends that have spun. I've had a good friend that was in a pretty serious accident about a year and a half ago. And there is that aspect of it.
Can you feel the difference between going 100 miles an hour in an MG and 120 miles an hour in an MG?
Absolutely. You know, 100 miles an hour in the midget is actually probably in the sweet spot of the car where the dynamics of the suspension and the engine are starting to all work together. The faster you go from that point on, you realize the sensory perceptions you wind up receiving are that you're actually pushing the boundary, and that's when you need to actually take a physical deep breath and relax at the wheel and trust that the car is going to wind up working for you rather than trying to work the car.
At the same time, it's amazing to think. I mean, you've set a record, and at the same time, you could go to a Volkswagen dealership, mm-hmm. buy a Rabbit,
oh, yes.
drive it out of the showroom, and easily break 125 miles an hour.
True. A Rabbit would be in a different class, of course, but it is the nature of the records as they're set up that have these different speeds. And yeah, on paper, it looks like, well, gosh.
Well, right.
I can buy a car at Safro's that's going to wind up, you know, doing that right off the lot. I often joke that my push car will outrun my race car. But the truth of the matter is that you're working towards a specific combination that fits into a specific category. And I think one of the reasons that the class is where it's at is that there are not a lot of two-seat sports cars that fit into this small engine category. And in the small engined two-seat sports car, you know, that's what MG made their name on going back to the 1920s was, you know, again, small displacement, fast, fun to drive cars. So there's that historical aspect to it too.
So you've been kind of in love with the MG since you're 9 or 10 years old. You go to Bonneville this year. You hit 126.684 miles an hour.
On my initial pass, yeah.
You step out of the car. There must be a feeling of elation.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody has ever driven a car like this at that speed.
No, this is true. This is true. And it's, you know, it's the summation of a lot of work and a lot of time.
Do you feel like a 9-year-old again?
I've felt like a 9-year-old for the last 46 years. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I do. And it was, you know, I don't actually have a speedometer in the car. So I was unaware of how fast I'd actually gone until my crew wound up and were over the moon over this thing, you know. And I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I didn't think the car actually had that in it. But it sure made the backup run the next day easier because I didn't have to push it that hard in order to wind up obtaining the record. It was it was very gratifying more than anything else. At 9 years old, I would have never have had the patience to put together a model of an MG Midget. At this point in my life, I'm just grateful for the time and the opportunity to have wound up, you know, putting myself through this.
Well, I have one more question for you.
Sure.
What kind of car do you drive to work?
Oh, good Lord. Well, it depends. In the summer, I have an MGB that I drive any time the weather permits. This time of year, I drive the tow car. It's a Dodge Magnum. It's got the Hemi V8. The only reason I own it is that it'll pull the trailer, which will pull the car out to Bonneville. Otherwise, I'd get something a little more practical. But I'm working on a 1961 Austin Healey Sprite, which is out in the garage. And the plan is to have that up and running hopefully by March. And that will probably be my summer driver or spring and summer driver once the weather changes. It's very similar in construction to the MG Midget, and they call it the Bug Eye. In Great Britain, they call it the Frog Eye. It's got that little smiley face on it. You know, some consider it the cutest car ever made. And of course, I'm going to look ridiculous in it being 6'5" and poked up over the windshield, but, they're just a fascinatingly simple and easy car to own and operate, and I'm looking forward to next summer with that. So,
well, Chris Conrad, many safe trips ahead.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
Milwaukeean Chris Conrad and his 1971 MG Midget set a new speed record at Utah's Bonneville Salt Flats in September, averaging 122.539 miles per hour and breaking a record which had stood for 22 years. He writes about the experience in the January issue of MG Enthusiast magazine. You can find a picture of him and his record-breaking car at WUWM.com. We couldn't find any songs about MGs, so we'll have to settle for a song by the MGs, or at least Booker T and the MGs. Taking us out today, I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for listening today, and I sure hope you'll tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for another edition of Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next. It's 11 o'clock.